What up, what up? Welcome to Mind Your Hive's Beekeeping. I'm your host, Greg Lehman. I am here with my beautiful wife, Kara Jo.
Hello, hello.
It is episode 25, and we're camping right now.
We are camping. We're outside in the shade.
We're camping at Second District's Brew Farm. Second District, one of our favorite breweries we talk about all the time in South Philly. They have a like 400-acre property out in kind of close to Honesdale, Pennsylvania, but it's like right on the New York PA border. Took us, I don't know, maybe 3 hours, a little bit more to get here.
Something like that.
But yeah, we came last year. There was just like a couple sites, and now I think they have like a dozen sites. They picked us up in an ATV, brought us out to our little primitive camp area with just a table and a fire pit.
But then there's like a tasting room that you can walk into that's an old hangar.
Yeah, we had a wood-fired pizza today. We had a pretty
cheeseburger. That cheeseburger was good.
Pretty good burger. Shout out Jimmy Buffett. I heard he died today. So we were like, let's get a cheeseburger in Jimmy
paradise.
Buffett's honor in paradise. Exactly.
What else are we doing?
But it's episode 25. Dude, thank you everybody for the feedback and for questions and, you know, all the good stuff. I feel like we're cranking. We're putting out a few more episodes lately, which is cool.
Yeah, life is a little bit more normal. We're drinking this tractor beer by Second District.
So yeah, Second District made this American Pale Lager. They call it tractor beer. It's got a picture of this beautiful old red tractor that they have up at the tasting room.
Second District just has good beer and good food. Doesn't disappoint.
Yeah, it's like what we want.
Yeah.
It's like not a ton of frills, just quality.
Quality, solid food.
So Kara, I was reading this article, which we'll talk about in a little bit, and they jokingly said, you know how like groups of animals have different names?
Okay. Like so, a murder of crows?
Yeah. So murder of crows is kind of my favorite one.
Of course, obviously.
But it said a group of beekeepers should be called an argument.
Oh, man.
I thought that was so right.
Yeah, that's good.
I wrote down some other groups. Do you want to see if you can guess?
Sure. I probably won't get a single one, but let's try.
All right. I'll start with an easy one. A troop. What in a group?
Geese.
Nope. Monkeys.
Oh, okay.
Mice is a mischief.
I didn't know that, but that's good.
That's a good one. A mischief of mice, a troop of monkeys. A group of otters.
No clue.
A romp.
Aww.
Right?
Yeah. They're very rompy.
And then we saw one of these today in a tree. It's the second
porcupine.
Time. Yeah. So we, last year when we were here.
Came across this fat porcupine.
Dude, I feel like we had to have talked about it.
I think we did because I talked about how they like mate.
Yeah. Dude, this porcupine, the only thing I could say is it was the size of an ottoman. Like these stumpy little legs and just this fat, huge body.
Huge. And it was moving so slow. It didn't even care that we were there.
Yeah.
But this year we saw one up in a tree.
Yeah, the very top of a tree, like straight up koala bearing up there.
Very cute.
Super duper cute, especially when it's like, you know, distance away from you.
It is a myth that porcupines shoot their needles. They don't, or what are they, quills?
Yeah, so I'm going to choose to believe that they can just fire those things like, you know, straight up. Stealth darts.
Okay. You believe what you want to believe.
But a group of porcupines, great name, called a prickle.
Aww.
A prickle of porcupines. You wouldn't feel that way if you were surrounded by this.
I would not. But also what I learned, because when we saw that porcupine last year, I like researched porcupines.
And remember, like, Kima, get over here. We were afraid our dog was going to see it. And then
they can.
And then this, rest in peace, Duncan. Back our blind and deaf Boston Terrier.
He had no idea.
He comes just running into the woods like he's no clue where he is. He just was probably caught Kima or Kara's scent. And we're like, I don't think you have to worry about him, but we should probably pick him up.
But their quills are like highly bacterial. And that's when like dogs get and
dirt.
They go deep into your skin. Like
dirty
deep in.
Girl. Dirty.
Yeah,
it dirty
causes
prickles.
Infection. But porcupines actually don't travel in groups because they're highly not typically because they're highly independent because they're so they have such good defense mechanisms.
Dude, if they were in groups and they were just banging all the time, there'd be so many porcupines because they don't really have predators, right?
Yeah, who's their predator? I don't even know.
I don't know.
Interesting.
I think somebody's dog we know once got into a porcupine and came back just covered in blood.
Oh, it's so bad when they get them.
Just all the quills in its face.
Yeah, and they go deep.
Oh, it's gnarly. Yeah, and they're
and then there's
I think
like
they're
a hook
they're barbed
at the end, yeah.
Gnarly.
Yeah, it can kill a dog.
So I didn't send you this New Yorker article that I'm talking about. I'm going to have to, I'll send it to you, Kara.
Okay.
It was titled, Is Beekeeping Wrong?
Ooh.
A bunch of people forwarded it over my way. I saw it just, you know, somebody posted it and I read it. It's a New Yorker article, so it's pretty long. And it was it was like a roller coaster reading it. The beginning of it, I'm like, oh my God, they're overstating things. They're being too black and white about stuff. They're like trying to be very like rigid, like you're this type of beekeeper. This is bad, whatever. And then as you read on, I think it kind of all makes a little bit more sense. But I don't want to talk about it too much just because Kara hasn't read it yet. But I was going to say, listeners, what are our listeners?
Listeners.
Yeah.
What's our gaggle of listeners called?
Oh, that's a good one. Just the hive, right?
Yeah, our hive.
Yeah, our hive.
Sweet.
Word. Welcome to the hive, y'all. I'm curious. You should read it. Is beekeeping wrong? You should read it. Hit me up. Hit us up on Instagram or, you know, mindyourhives@gmail.com. I say on Facebook, but honestly, I never check Facebook. It's not user-friendly the way they do it for, like, business accounts, and it's just a total pain. So I'm rarely on Facebook, but hit us up and let us know what you think or, you know, what your thoughts on the article is. Because, it's definitely divisive. They talk a lot about, like, natural beekeeping, which are these terms that people try to put, like, square peg, round hole. They try to, like, very define beekeepers in certain ways, which I'm happy to be a very, like, a little bit of this and a little bit of this and a little bit of this. The only thing we ever say is that we're organic beekeepers because any methods we use are going to be in, you know, this organic standard. But other than that, like, there's little pieces of Darwinian beekeeping that we do. And then there's certainly pieces that we don't. Like, do you remember Tom Seeley talking about Darwinian beekeeping?
I mean, not really, but I mean, I could guess what it is. Is it?
Well, it's pretty in-depth. So I think it's Honeybee Democracy, or maybe it's his other book. But towards the end, like maybe chapter 10 or so of it, he defines Darwinian beekeeping. So, you know, everybody knows treatment-free beekeeping, conventional beekeeping, organic beekeeping. Those are kind of the three standards right now that are being researched in you know,
treatment methods, really.
Exactly. But he does Darwinian beekeeping, which is very interesting. It's like his version of trying to beekeep in the most natural way possible. So I think some people refer to it as natural beekeeping, but like you can't really have hives next to each other because in nature, hives are spread out. I mean, in his research, he found a hive every like 50, 75 yards, but I think he talks about like 150 yards apart minimum.
Was he the guy that like dyed them blue, some of them blue, and then saw where the other blue bees, they ended up in other hives?
Probably. I mean, he definitely was one that was like tracing bee flight patterns and locating hives and measuring that way for sure. Only using local bees. Yeah, we're way on board with that. I'm very, very against people buying packages of bees that are being shipped halfway across the country. And just, it just doesn't make sense to me. Not to mention, they're probably not the healthiest bees to begin with. Get an overwintered stock. You know, stock that is proven in your area, buy a nuke, you know, wait for somebody to split their hive in the beginning of the year, catch a swarm in the beginning of the year. Springtime is swarm time. Go back and listen to that episode. I don't know how many episodes ago, but whatever. He talks about in Darwinian beekeeping, splits are the way to rear queens. Totally agree. That's how we wait till they show signs of swarming and then we split them. And that's how we, you know, and we try to split and take queen cells from the hives that have proven to be the best when it comes to mite control. So we're splitting for queen rearing. Totally agree with that method.
Is that because there was like the research that swarm cells produce healthier queens than like emergency cells? Is that kind of where that comes from?
Yeah, I don't know if Tom Seeley, if his research showed that, but we definitely had a speaker that showed, you know, biologically in size of mandibular gland and size of different aspects of the queen, a queen that was started from a swarm from, you know, basically a queen started by the hive naturally making a new queen versus being forced to, which would be like a walkaway split or, when you're just, you know, raising queens and doing grafting, you know, you're forcing these queens to be made versus allowing these bees to pick their egg, pick the timing, et cetera, et cetera. But he's big on, I don't want to say he's big on, but this method involves checking for mites, which, you know, a lot of the things we just talked about line up with treatment-free beekeepers, but then all of a sudden you say you have to test for mites. They go, no, 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 we don't. Well, he says you still have to test for mites, and not only do you have to test, but when they have high mite loads, you have to kill the whole colony. And it's not treating. I think, to me, it's just killing the queen.
Yeah. Okay, that makes more sense.
Because then those genetics aren't continuing. Although you are then allowing those drones to go out. So I don't. That's a good question. I'd have to go back and see what he means by that.
But we do that because we're picking and choosing, and it is survival of the fittest. Like, who do we want to breed? And which ones, like, you have listed,
But we treat when they're over a threshold. He kills when they're over a threshold.
Okay.
So there's no treating in Darwinian beekeeping. There's killing.
Interesting.
Yeah. And that, but, okay, so I get this just kind of leads into this whole craziness in Australia that's going on.
Dude.
Ugh.
It's really interesting in Australia because I'm watching all these things and it feels like Australia, okay, so Australia just, well, what was it? Has it been like a year since they've known?
They've known for about a year, but they've shown that there has been mites for at least 2 years in the country.
Okay. So
Varroa mites, obviously.
So they have been trying to figure this out, but like so many countries already have the Varroa mite. And I feel like Australia is not utilizing the information that is already out there and like resources and like how to handle this situation, and they're like,
I mean, the government
freaking out.
Well, the government's going around and just killing bees.
Yeah, like without beekeepers knowing.
Just if you have a bee in this eradication zone, they're just killing it.
They're burning the hives, right?
But
I've seen videos of people.
They also allowed for a whole almond pollination for all these, you know, corporate beekeepers that have do pollination services. They allowed all these bees from all these different areas to go do an almond pollination and then go back to their areas. And it's like, what? You just created this super spreader event and then you're going to kill bees from in other areas? Like, if there's ever like capitalism bullshit, that's it right there. Like,
and
oh,
they're
no.
not even they're killing these hives, but they're not testing them first.
Oh, by the way, the pollination bees. They required them to test like 50 hives, but only report the testings from one hive. It's just spitting in the face of all these other beekeepers. Total BS.
Well, when this whole thing came out, I was like, everybody was freaking out. I'm like, okay, well, this sucks, obviously.
Like, guess what? It happened.
But like well, it was inevitable.
In the eyes of any beekeeper that knows Varroa mites, it was inevitable.
But like,
and just globalism.
Yeah. But like, I just was like, okay, well, they know what to do. They haven't had to go through this whole process of like, you know, over here we had resistance and, you know, it has been such a battle to figure out kind of where we're at. And there's like quality research saying that organic beekeeping methods is like the most effective method. And they're not using any of the information from over here, it doesn't seem like.
And like, okay. Different beekeeping methods for different areas, no doubt about it. But newsflash, and we got a decent number of Australia listeners. Australia is like the second or third country most listened to country, whatever. You know what I'm saying?
All right, mate.
It's because our dog's an Australian cattle dog, respect. So how do I put this nicely? There's clearly egos in play. And there's people that are picking, and this is probably worse in the U.S., honestly, but there's people that are picking and choosing the anecdotes that they want to define themselves with as beekeepers. And you've got these people that are like, nope, in other countries, treatment-free is proven to work. And you're like, okay, well, my first question, are honeybees native in that country? I don't know of any countries that are putting out anything saying that their bee populations are growing, but okay, if you want to have an anecdote that says treatment-free is working, are honeybees native? Because they're not native in Australia, period. It's a non-native species, And when you have a non-native species that is getting disease because of another non-native species in the varroa mite and vectoring that disease to your native species, I think you're pretty irresponsible in saying, let's just go treatment-free and let this thing run its course.
Well, you know, this is like a symptom of colonization, really. I mean, if you look at it, it's just what's happening with people.
What do you mean?
Just like non-natives spreading disease. Oh, and, yeah, right. You know, it's just not looking out for that.
Yeah. And then there's a, you know, that line of conversation then brings these people to the forefront that are like, beekeeping is bad, or that title, that article, is beekeeping wrong. Luckily, we have some great programs. For instance, Keith Delaplane down in at the University of Georgia. Shout out to Keith. Heard him speak a few times. I mean, one of the forefront of research for beekeeping in the U.S. But through like some real long studies, he has shown that honeybees actually help. They work well alongside native bees. They're actually... Native bees are more productive pollinators when honeybees are around.
Is that because of I do remember this now.
I wish I had written down more like points from that presentation, just like the reasons and the how he showed it. But go ahead, look up Keith Delaplane, honeybees, you know, working alongside native bees, University of Georgia. I'm pretty sure you can find his work. But that was so interesting. However, you also have, you know, Cornell University, it's showing diseased honeybees are vectoring disease to native bees. So we say it every time, and we're not these like gung-ho over-treat your bees people, but you got to look out for native species, period. And by allowing, you know, mites to overrun your colonies and pretending like treatment-free is going to solve that, like it ain't. It has proven that it's not. So I think we need to be smarter about it. And Australia needs to look at it and go, okay, you know, the world has shown us, the countries that these bees are not native in has shown us we need to act and do these things. And it's not killing them with terrible chemicals that are killing other native bees too.
Right.
Ugh.
I think
treatment-free people, these Australian treatment-free people, are assuming that anybody that says you should treat your bees are the same people that are saying the government should be killing the bees, and it's not.
Well, also, what is the resistance to treatment? Like, I feel like that is a I don't know. The only treatment-free beekeeper I ever knew was like, I don't have chemicals in my life, so I don't want the bees to have chemicals in their lives. And that seems just silly. It seems not practical. It seems like we're not living in the world we're given and not living in reality. And it also
And that might make sense for certain chemicals, but...
Yeah. But you can, I'm saying you're also humanizing the bees.
Yeah, stop humanizing the bees.
Stop humanizing animals, period.
Yeah. Oh, that's so true.
So like...
Which, you know, all right, that's funny you say that, because we're up at the tasting room this morning or early this afternoon, and some dude walked up with his dog, and his dog was like on a leash, and we have our dog and Kima's on a leash, and he's like, oh, can they meet? And I was like, nah, man, all dogs don't need to meet. I'm like, Kima's a sweetheart, but like, I don't need her meeting some random dog on leashes at a tasting room. Like, I want to go to the guy, like, do you walk up to every human here and shake their hand and introduce yourself? No, you don't, because not every human needs to interact. Go do your thing. Our dogs don't need to become friends. Stop it. Stop humanizing your dog.
Yeah.
Let your dog be a dog. Trust me, these two dogs have smelled each other from very far away, and they know each other's here.
Well, so the whole thing about chemicals is, like, everybody has chemicals in their lives. Like, everything, like, organic compounds and organic treatment methods are chemicals. Like, you're using... chemicals.
Water's a chemical. I know. I mean, so I hate that. Like, when I say chemical, I don't mean that. I mean unnatural bull.
Well, that's what I was talking about. Like, you know, I don't use chemicals.
I try to be chemical-free. I try to limit preservatives
exactly.
in my diet.
Exactly. So, like, conventional methods versus organic methods. You could still treat your bees without, quote-unquote, harmful, harsh chemicals. I mean, I guess in any circumstance, anything can be a harsh, harmful chemical.
Yeah.
Which we saw with... like formic a little bit,
Yeah. All right. So that's a good. Well, we don't need to harp on this. I mean, just hey, read that New Yorker article and look into what's going on in Australia. It's sad. It's messed up. It's government overreach. I can tell you that.
And there's a lot of just like argument and divisiveness. And I just, it's kind of confusing to me. I mean, I understand why, because the state of the world, but like, it just seems unnecessary.
It changed from like maybe the Australian government is looking out for the bee to, oh, no, they're not at all looking out for the bee. They're looking out for money in the hands of a select number of commercial beekeepers and probably huge corporations that control the almond supply of Australia. Like, yeah, you showed your hand, dog.
So gross.
So gross. So yeah, all right. We talked about last episode. We tested all of our hives. The hives that tested over 6 mites per sample of 300, so 2% mite load or more, or I should say more than 2%, because if it had 6, we did not treat. So over 2% mite load, we treated, and we treated with Formic Pro. Formic Pro, 2 strips, 14-day treatment. There's studies that have shown that 1 strip for 10 days, followed by a 2nd strip for 10 days, which is one of the methods that Formic talks about, is not enough of a concentration of the thymol to penetrate the cappings, but 2 strips for 14 days is enough. However, you have some heat issues or some heat restrictions. So look it up, but first 3 days, you don't want to be above 82. Some people say 85 degrees outside temperature. And then you can't be over 92 degrees for those 14 days overall.
It affects brood and it can affect like the queen.
Yeah, exactly. So it can kill off brood and it can cause queen issues.
I wonder if it affects the pheromones.
That's my theory on it. Yeah. Is basically it's like so much heat, it's creating, you know, too much thymol at the same time. It's the concentration's too high, kills off some of the pheromone or like, whatever, covers up the pheromone, and then all of a sudden this hive thinks it's queenless. They start making a new queen, or they're going, her pheromone's not strong enough anymore. We need to replace her and supersede her.
So we put it in, and the weather looked great. And then
we put it in, and we were like, okay, it's not going to get
close.
It was like supposed to be 80, and we were like, okay, 85 seems to be the limit here. It's going to be 80. I think we're going to be fine.
It got up to like 87, 88.
Yeah, not in, good.
Like for 2 of the first 3 days.
Not cool. Ugh,
so pissed.
So we went back. That ended August 28th, I think it was. So I went in and I checked. That was about 30 hives. And I went in and I checked. Well, no, it wasn't about 30 hives. It was like a dozen of the hives that were there. I ended up checking every single hive that day. But about a dozen of them, or maybe 10 of those, were treated. And I did notice there were 3 or 4 of those hives that had superseded. What was good was that I was able to find queens. I was able to find virgin queens. But I think there is a chance that, and I did see some spotty brood patterns in some of those hives where I think they had some brood die off.
And they were cleaning it out.
Yeah. The dude's coming by with the ATV right
Again,
now.
Again, he did earlier too.
But this time he's got wood.
Oh, he's bringing our wood.
I wonder if he's bringing our wood.
Should we pause it?
We'll find out in a second.
Yeah. He's going up the hill.
All right, sweet.
We're good.
So,
Oh no, he's coming around. Just kidding. Pause it.
I think we were talking about Formic.
Yeah.
All right. Sorry about that. Little wood delivery, which is nice. We're going to have a rager.
A huge rager. We have so much wood. This is going to be amazing.
He hooked it up for sure.
All right, so Formic, you went in all the hives. Oh, brood. They were eating out the brood.
Yeah, so there was some spotty brood, which I think could have been caused by, you know, the temperature. And they it's all nice, though, when you see spotty brood. It means they cleaned them out, you know? Like, I wasn't seeing dead larvae and stuff like that. I was seeing cleaned out, just spotty pattern. But for the queens that they superseded, I was able to find virgin queens or see exactly what was going on. There was one real interesting hive, and I took some photos of it. We might have to, we'll try to see if we can post it. I took videos of it. I found one cell, or excuse me, I found one frame, and it had probably 4 open queen cells that had emerged. Okay. And it, but they were in the middle of the frame. So like typically, you know, top or middle of the frame, you would, you would think of that as a super seizure situation when you find the swarm, the, not the swarm cell, the queen cell. If their queen cells are on the bottom of the frames.
Or the bottom of the built out.
Right.
So it's not always, if it's not always built out, it could be in the middle of the frame, but it's at the bottom of the built out wax.
Built out area. Yeah. Typically you would think of that as more of a swarm cell. It's interesting. That's how they do it. I don't know what this, I don't know why, but sweet. And, but they're also with super seizure, a lot of times you don't see more than like two or three cells. So, you know, it was like four or five, but they were in the middle of the frames, but they all had emerged. You can see they had the perfect circle chew out. They all definitely emerged. There wasn't like one emerged and then the other ones got killed. So I'm like, ah, all right, here we go. There was a battle here. And the population was high.
Yeah.
The population was high. So I didn't think that there was a chance that there was a secondary swarming or, you know, a swarm that happened because there just, there was a lot of bees. So I'm like, all right, I got to find the virgin. I got to find the queen here because I'm just like a little worried what might have happened. Sure enough, because, you know, I'm the master of queen finding.
You sure are.
Self-proclaimed. I find the virgin and I'm like, sweet. I'm like, I'm going to take a picture of her. As I'm taking a picture of her, I'm looking at her a little more closely, and I notice she's got a jacked up wing.
And it's not even jacked up. It's like almost, it's a stump. She's got one wing, really.
Yeah, she's one wing. So, okay, there's a chance that that was from a high mite load.
That's what I thought originally when you showed me the video.
Yeah, went back, looked at the notes. It was not a particularly high mite load. Like, not a high enough mite load that I would have expected to see deformed wing virus. But went, looked at a lot of emerging brood that were coming out, looked at the bees really closely, like spent some time with that hive and realized there's no other deformed wing virus. I'm seeing new bees emerge. They're, you know, fuzzy bees, not deformed wing virus. So that makes me think when she was fighting.
Battle Royale.
But cage match style. She, and they'll chew at each other's wings. It's like one of the things they do. And I think somebody got on her, chewed her wing, but in the end she won. But now she can't go on a mating flight. But she's got the queen pheromone. So that hive is like, hey, we got a queen, but we don't have any eggs.
Thank God you found her.
Right? There's a lot of times that I would have seen that virgin and gone, cool, there's a virgin in here. Let's move on. Put her back in. Let's not annoy this hive at all. Let's just give her another 10 days. Let her get mated.
But you are the master.
But looked a little deeper. So what I did, killed that virgin queen.
Got to. You got to.
So sacrificed her. And then the next day, I merged in a swarm that we had caught that also had a virgin queen.
Yeah.
That
was interesting. Not expecting that. Not expecting to start the day off that way.
Yeah, so check out on Instagram at Kara Jo Bee Farm. We posted a little video of the swarm catch.
Yeah, so I woke up in the morning and I turn and I'm like, there's a paper wasp nest that's fully developed that I've never seen. That can't be right. It's got to be a swarm.
I was still asleep.
You were asleep. It was early.
Yeah.
You were sleeping and I go in and I go, Craig, there's a swarm in a tree. It's too high for me to get alone. Greg was like, I need to sleep more. So I'm like, okay. Luckily, it was like in a super shaded spot that wouldn't get sun for hours and hours. But I set out.
Because a lot of times you'll see, you know, the bees have gathered in that spot and they're waiting for some warm light to hit them. And then they're going to move on.
So I set up two like swarm traps, essentially. Put some swarm commander, put a frame in each of the, like these nuke boxes and put them around and was like, okay.
Yeah, maybe like, this will tempt.
Yeah,
tempt
I don't know if this is going to work, but I can't do this
because
alone.
When a swarm is hanging out on a branch, it's not their final home. That's a spot that they've decided typically like towards the late afternoon, they stop, they cluster up, they wait overnight, they keep the queen warm, you know, keep her in the middle. They're all, you know, they're just like moving around in this clump. And then the next day they move and hopefully find their final home. But a lot of times, you know, they'll just go branch to branch. You know, they might fly half a mile and then cluster on another branch, wait for a while.
And it was right above our hive. So it
like
hadn't
25 feet.
Yeah. Like up. So, yeah.
And I think I know the hive it came from. What, you know, going back in and inspecting, I think there was a hive that was obviously that swarmed.
Yeah.
You know, just a kind of fluke late swarm. We don't see a ton of swarming this time of year.
Well, also, one thing I wanted to just say about formic is because of everything we just said about formic, you want to be careful late in the season using formic because it can cause queen problems. And like we had to after Hurricane Ida, we used formic.
Yeah, we used didn't formic have in October.
Yeah, we didn't have like electricity and we were real worried about the whole queen situation. So you, when you use formic, you want to be real just cognizant of that because it can cause problems late season. And then there's not enough drones to get your queen mated and then you're up the creek.
Yeah, no doubt.
So anyway, so then Greg woke up and was like, okay, let's do this thing. I was like, all right, let's do it.
So it was about 25 feet up in a tree, over top, almost directly over, but not quite, maybe 7 feet in front, perfectly hung over. I was not hung over, luckily.
Luckily, but, behind the hives, not in front of the hives, because that would have been a situation.
Wow, there's a bumblebee next to us on goldenrod, and the bumblebee has huge pollen pants. Oh, look at those things. Wow, that is awesome. Goldenrod popping up here.
Yeah.
So so what I did was I got a like thin rope and
it's a sweat bee near you.
I tied a wrench to it and I used it. I threw it over the branch. So, you know, hooked into the branch with this rope, and then we put a tarp down on the ground with a big box, and I just classic gave it a jerk, shook the swarm, it fell down. We put a camera right underneath it. Real cool looking.
Yeah, it's cool to just like, because it kind of falls in a group and then it spreads out. And then we had a nuke that we put brood.
A frame of brood, which will often keep them there. When all of a sudden those bees are like, yeah, we got brood here, they stay.
Yeah.
So and a good thing to do if you catch a swarm, throw a frame of brood in the box.
And that was already one of the nukes that I had put Swarm Commander in. So there's Swarm Commander in it and like two built-out frames and two blank frames.
Yep. And yeah, blank frames are key when you're catching a swarm because they are ready to build. They come with bees that are ready to build.
Because they part fill of the up swarm, their bellies.
The part of the swarm is these young bees that are great for building because they know when they get to their new home, they need to build.
And they fill up their bellies to leave so they can just... Yep.
Yeah, they take a bunch of honey with them. So we were able to knock that swarm down with a couple shakes of this branch. And then we went into just trying to find the queen. And we're just, you know, the way I do it is I look for clumps. I look for clusters of bees.
Yeah.
And typically... The bees will cluster around their queen. They like, you know, they'll go to protect her.
So that was really obvious where there were some.
Yeah.
Because we had a huge
there
box.
There were like two clusters.
And nobody was going in the box.
Yeah.
So we like.
Yeah. We knew the queen wasn't in the box, obviously.
She was outside the box.
So then, shocker.
Look, I could have found her, but
I picked the right cluster.
I gave you that cluster. Damn it. I really wanted to find the queen.
And then we got her in the box, and then once we like put her in the box, you see them marching into this box.
And because of the Swarm Commander, they were going in, but we knew right off the bat, like, she wasn't in the box right to start.
She's in there now. Yeah. There's like lines just direct marching right into the box. And then the course of the next few hours, wow, I just like... Then over the course of the next few hours... I would just shake that branch. They would have some stragglers go back up to it. I would shake it down. And then at nighttime went out and there were no bees on the branch anymore. The box was stuffed.
Yeah, there were a lot of bees. That's why I was like, we can't just let this swarm go. It was a big swarm.
Especially for being a virgin queen. That was a big virgin swarm.
Big swarm.
Not a big swarm, but a big virgin swarm for sure.
For sure.
I've added a second nuke onto that box. And then I taped them up and moved them to a friend's house, where they stayed for a couple days to just reorient their GPS. And then when I brought them back, because I had redone their GPS, I was able to merge them right into a hive that was in that same apiary. I worry just about if a swarm comes from the same hive that you got, and then you put them back, not the same hive, excuse me. If a swarm comes from the same apiary that you're then going to put them back into, I just worry that you're going to lose a lot of forage bees back to the original home. Maybe you won't, because they were already in swarm mode that they knew they were going to a new home. I'm not positive, but If I can reorient their GPS, I'm going to. Now, if I was just going to take that swarm and move it to a different apiary, I would have just moved it directly to a new apiary. No big deal.
That hive was queenless, though. So that swarm was like a primary swarm. It just had a virgin because they didn't, right? Or we don't even know what
we
happened.
We don't know. That was like a random hive that when the inspector was in, he's like, yo, I saw some queen cells in that hive.
And then he
like,
closed it up, really? And we never really knew because we didn't want to disturb it.
They were already capped. So. Yeah. But when I went back in, I saw a bunch of emergence. So it looked like a lot of queens were able to emerge.
Yeah, which is why they swarmed.
Which I think is exactly why they swarmed. You know, one of those queens was very convincing and got a bunch of people to join her. Got a bunch of bees to join her. So, all right, just wrapping up, formic, be aware, temperature, super important. Last year when we did our formic treatment, which, you know, we do this time of year, the temperature was perfect and we didn't have a single issue with queen die-off or supersedure. Everybody totally fine. When we went back 14 days later, everybody had eggs and a queen. This year, a little different, which makes me go, I think it was temperature-based.
And they say that could happen.
Yeah. And in previous years, we have had this happen, but it has only ever happened. Other years, it was always temperature was fine. It only was a queen that was 2 years or older, and they superseded her when you did formic. So I think it was probably her time anyway, come September. Yeah, you know, you have a queen that's 2-3 years old. Typically, they're going to replace her anyway. So yeah, just know that's an issue with formic that you could have. I mean, I said it last episode, every type of treatment, there is a negative. There's no treatment that doesn't have a negative effect, but they're all better than straight up over diseased bees because of mites. In our opinion, I guess I should say, I don't know. The last thing, there's definitely the last thing I wanted to talk about, and we're gonna get into herb corner. We can't forget
about
that.
Yeah, I got a good one.
Was just okay, beekeepers, especially beginners. What are you gonna see soon?
Oh, this is so good to talk about because we have been like, oh shit, and then it's like, no, this is normal.
So, you're going to see soon, and it varies by the hive. I mean, you know, bee to bee is always different. They don't all read the same books we do. But you're going to see soon laying patterns
drop off.
You're going to see a lot less bees happening. But I think I said it earlier, what we do right now, what we're doing as beekeepers right now determines the honey crop we're going to get next year. You need healthy bees right now. Right now, winter bees are being made. So, okay, it takes 21 days for a worker bee to go from egg to emerge, right? 21 days is end of September. They're not laying. You might have two more cycles of, you might have 40 more days that bees are going to be born, but there's going to be a big drop off. And the reason there's a drop off is because the bees know they can't have crazy numbers going into winter. They know that there's a specific number that these hives just somehow magically know. And
they know math.
They know math.
Bees know math.
They know, in our climate in Pennsylvania, you need 60 to 80 pounds of honey to overwinter a full beehive. And they need a certain population. That's the number for. If you had say you were to combine two full hives in November or something, there's going to be way, way, way too many bees and they're going to eat through their reserves way too quickly. And then you're going to have starvation. And the bees know this. So they start choking the number of bees that are made. They literally won't let the queen lay. They'll stop her from laying. They'll nip at her and stop her from laying. And there's been times late September where Karen and I went in, this is years ago, went in and I was like, dude, all our hives are queenless.
Yeah.
I'm not seeing fresh eggs.
We were so freaked out.
What the hell? How did this happen? They were looking so good. There's nothing we can do. It's too late for us to add a queen. I don't want to merge them right now.
It's so alarming. And it's earlier than you think it's going to be.
But then there's some hives that you go in late October and you're like, yo, she's laying still. Just, you know, the nature of the bee, like Russian bee, they were Russian bees when we had this scare.
Okay.
And Russian bees are known to really overwinter with a small population. They stop their queen from laying early.
So, like what you said was, these bees now are helping raise the winter bees. And yeah, you need healthy bees now to help make healthy bees later. So yes, the conditions of your hives now determine the conditions of your hives for the winter, and if you have like nice fat bees.
And they're referred to as fat bees, winter bees. They have...
And we're already starting to see fatter bees.
Yeah, go back, listen to the episode we put out that this time last year. We go in-depth about winter bees and fat bees, and there's just some fascinating... genetically, these bees are different. Summer bees are genetically different than winter bees. These winter bees can live 6 months. They're literally fatter. They're able to store all these amino acids that they're getting from their food, that they're getting from bee bread, pollen, and they're able to store those amino acids. And then come springtime, they're able to regurgitate that food to the larva, where before summer bees are fed, the larva is fed bee bread, they're fed pollen. They might not have pollen in the hive come springtime because there's not pollen resources out there.
You belched in, I heard it.
That was a little, I don't know if it was
a little bit much. I heard it.
Sorry, crushing tractor beer over here. But they're able to regurgitate those amino acids, that food, into the larva, like from their own winter fat stores. So cool.
Which
so
is crazy. Also has to do with, I think, these bees, like bees raising healthy bees, is they all do that, and you need them to be like.
You know what I was just thinking? I'm so curious. Australia, going back to Australia.
Yeah.
Australia is a part of the EU. The EU has banned neonicotinoids. So.
Hell yeah.
Glyphosate, a.k.a. Monsanto Bear Roundup. Roundup is terrible. Stop using it, people. Stop telling me that. I just use it on these certain plants because they're so invasive.
Especially people with well water who are using it. Oh, so dumb. If you have well water, stop using that.
It's ridiculous. I mean, but all everything's getting run off into water. Stop using neonicotinoids. Shout out EU. They have banned neonicotinoids. So I'm curious. Like, studies have shown very clearly that neonicotinoids negatively affect honeybees. I think the specific was queen honeybees that are exposed to neonicotinoids produce worker brood that has 26% smaller mandibular glands.
Yeah, that whole study was crazy when we learned that.
Mandibular glands produce royal jelly. So these bees aren't able to produce as much royal jelly. Then that goes deeper, that larva that doesn't get royal jelly can't live as long. Guess what they can't do? They can't produce as fat of bees. So then you have 25%. Imagine if there's a food that if moms ate, and there probably is, but imagine if there's a food that human mothers ate and their babies were 26% smaller if they were exposed to that food.
Yeah. Ugh.
And all of a sudden you're like, well, she...
No, it's good. It's good. It's great.
She ate Cheerios and her baby's only 5 pounds, which you'd expect it to be like 7 pounds, but whatever. No, I would hope that would get nicked real quick.
Probably not.
Nipped in the bud real quick, but whatever. But yeah, so Australia has, they've banned these. So like, maybe their bees can fight disease better and, maybe they're better off. But I still don't think.
So this is interesting.
Maybe in Australia, they're able to have bees spread apart where your bees are only interacting with your bees. Doubt it. But I don't know. Does everybody live in the outback in Australia?
Yeah, I think we need to take a trip because I don't kidding. Think.
We all know from Crocodile Dundee 2, it's, there's some big cities in Australia.
So there was, speaking of like the pesticides. So there were a bunch of beekeepers that went to Kenya years ago. Well, that's a loud one.
Cicada, right? I feel like that was cicada.
And they were in Kenya and they were doing like this beekeeping trip and they came and presented it to the Beekeepers Association. It was like fascinating. My favorite presentation ever. You missed that one.
I did.
And they were talking about these Kenyans had bees. They weren't that educated in beekeeping. Their bees were not having like this die-off mite problem like we did. But when beekeepers got there, like American beekeepers got there, they realized that they were like seeing mites, I think. And they were like, you do have mites, but there was no pesticide use in Kenya. And they were like, we think maybe that has something to do with it. So I wonder.
Well, African bees, Africanized bees also have a shorter brood.
These weren't Africanized bees. So
that was a big part of Africanized bees are able to keep mites at bay better. They have shorter brood span or whatever you call that, you know, egg to emerge.
Yeah.
So the mites aren't able to produce as easily. They run smaller numbers. Mites aren't able to produce as
So there much. Were like different like mountain ranges and different types of bees lived in different types of mountain ranges.
They weren't able to like cross over.
Well, and then the Africanized bees were able to get over. And then that was like that's like how it happened. But yeah, so just pesticide usage is making our bees weaker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hugely.
Making everybody weaker.
Killing their gut bacteria, which is in turn, they're not able to fight for themselves. Oh, yeah. It's depressing.
All right. Do you want to hear some cool stuff in Herb Corner, though?
We need them. We haven't gotten any really good submissions for Herb Corner music yet, people. Come on. Let's hear it.
Give me a theme song, guys.
We need an Herb Corner theme song.
I could sing, but you don't want me to.
We need anything but Kara singing
anything
her own theme song.
That. Oh, boy. All right. So I wanted to talk about garlic.
Your face just like lit up.
Oh, I love herbs. I really do. It makes me so happy.
Anyone named Herb. Anyone named Herb.
Herb. Is anybody named Herb these days?
These days? Herbie Hancock.
Not
a real person.
Not a real person. And not these days either. Okay. So garlic. Because garlic, you can still buy fresh garlic, local fresh garlic now. And really, if you want to plant garlic, I just heard somebody the other day say farmers used to plant garlic in October, but now with the climate changing, like early November in this area, and we live in southeastern Pennsylvania, that's when farmers are starting to plant garlic. I'm sure not all of them, but. So I've been talking about how herbs have energetics. So garlic is hot and dry.
So wait, garlic is an herb?
Yeah.
Okay. I just think of like vegetable, fruit, herbs.
It's medicinal.
So herbs, it's defined as an herb basically meaning it's medicinal. Well, I just thought like, I don't know, like oregano, spices, herbs. No, because that's herbs and spices. That'd be different. Okay. Sorry. I interrupted.
I think it's just like things that have, I don't know what the definition of an herb is, but it's garlic is medicinal.
Yeah.
And has medicinal properties. So yeah. Is it an herb?
Marijuana is an herb. Medicinal. Holler. Shout out.
Okay. all right. So it's hot and dry. So you.
Garlic. But like hot and dry is something that herbalists talk about.
Well, it's energetics of herbs. So you really want to, and energetics can kind of seem like it could be intimidating, but it doesn't have to be. I'm trying to explain things in a way that doesn't, people are walking by. Kima's going to bark. Okay. The energetics of herbs don't have to be, intimidating. And I'm going to try to do it in a way that you don't feel like it's intimidating, but garlic is hot and dry, which I'm going to kind of get into, but that means it can be irritating to the stomach. Just think if you've ever just eaten a clove of garlic. They had me do that at the farm last summer and I'm like, are you punking me? They're like, no, Kara, eat it. And I was like, okay.
They're like, first year farmer,
that's
eat your
like,
garlic.
You do it first. And then they both did it. And I was like, oh, okay, I'll do it.
I mean, our herbalist is like, eat raw garlic.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about that. So as I speak, we're going to, you know, it's good to dry things out and heat things up. So as I talk, hopefully that makes sense.
Yeah, like you're sick, you want to like dry out, you're full of mucus, you're
exactly,
wet, you want to dry it out. Yeah,
so
that makes sense.
So garlic is very antibacterial. So it's good for lung infections, but it's got to be lung infections where you're producing a lot of mucus. Lung infections where you know, when you have that cough and you can't really produce
like
anything.
Like a dry cough?
Yeah. That would be, if you ate garlic when you had a dry cough that like, maybe you felt like you had mucus, but you can't get it up, that's dry. You don't want to take garlic in that situation because then it could exacerbate the hot, dry condition. So you want to take it if you have like a moist kind of cold condition.
Yeah, runny nose.
Exactly. Yeah. Look at you.
Nailing it.
So smart. And it's also good for like antibiotic resistant situations. So like a lot, you know, you hear about antibiotic resistant conditions. And so garlic can be really effective in that. It also has, you want it, when you take garlic in all of the ways I'm going to tell you, you're going to want to take it with some food in your stomach because it can irritate the lining because it is hot and dry. But it doesn't, like antibiotics, when you take antibiotics, you're going to, excuse me, want to take probiotic because antibiotics can wipe out a significant amount of your gut bacteria.
Yeah, they're not as, so antibiotics aren't so selective of good and bad bacteria. They just wipe the slate clean.
Not totally clean. It's not like you have no gut bacteria when you take antibiotics, but it reduces the...
throws it off balance.
It reduces the diversity of bacteria in your stomach. And garlic has little effect on normal gut flora.
Nice. Normal gut flora.
Yes, normal gut flora. So this antibacterial nature. So garlic, the main... what's the word? I don't remember right now. The main constituent of garlic that is antibacterial is called allicin. Okay?
Like the woman's name?
Yes, but it's not spelled the same, but yes.
Well, that's what I was asking.
No, it's A-L-L-I-C-I-N.
Okay. I bet you have a kid named Allison spelled that way.
Some crunchy parent. So, but allicin, for it to become allicin and be antibacterial, it needs oxidation. So it exists as allein, which is, I think, A-L-L-I-I-N.
Whoa.
So it naturally exists as allein, and then it needs oxidation to become allicin, which is this highly antibacterial nature of garlic. So in order to do that, what you want to do to your garlic is if you have a garlic press, ideal. They're kind of expensive, but like you buy it once and you use it forever.
A garlic press?
They're more expensive than you would think.
Like the hand, John?
Yes.
Get out of here.
Look it up.
All right, I'm going to look it up while you're talking. I'm going to see. I'm going to go Target.
Yeah, look it up. It's more expensive than you're going to think.
Keep going.
So crush it and let it sit for like 10, 15 minutes. It oxidizes and it increases in antibacterial. It turns into allicin and it's more... it's more antibacterial. If you don't have a garlic press, you can just like crush it, chop it up. And that's a good way to do it. Raw garlic, as soon as you start like cooking it at high temperatures, it loses a lot of this. So everything that I'm talking about is basically raw. I mean, you can pour like hot water on it, but like cooking it is really going to change it. This was really interesting. I feel like people could really use this information. Did you look? Did you find it?
We don't have service here, but it's trying.
Well, it'll probably come up. There was this preliminary study in 2018 with people in the ICU. So people in the ICU often get other like hospital-induced infections. And so they gave this group of people, some people garlic pills, which is like dried, ground up garlic. And then the other half of the group, placebo. And the people that took the garlic pills...
had really bad breath.
Yes. And there was no incidence of hospital-induced infections.
Or of vampires.
Correct. Also, all of the above.
Cool.
All of the
above. Somebody added... well, I guess one's not a benefit, but... bad breath, keep away vampires.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, you need the garlic for the vampires.
All right, so anyway, sorry. Placebo...
I said it all, but you got distracted.
Just say it again. I know.
Just the people that took the garlic pills in the hospital that were in the ICU, they had no incident of hospital-related infections, which is like high in a lot of people in the ICU.
Yeah.
So I don't know. If I knew somebody in the ICU, I'd be like, yo, take these garlic pills while you're here. This is really interesting.
You should take garlic pills just because you're a teacher and you got all those little
and just
petri dishes running around everywhere. Well, no, not to scare them away with your breath, because protect from, you know.
I've been eating fresh garlic. Yeah, I've been eating
better
it.
Than I am.
Yeah.
Site can't be reached. It's not letting me Google right now.
Okay, I don't know why you're not believing.
You don't have
me.
A garlic press. You should get a garlic press.
That's what I'm saying. One time, they last forever if you get a good one.
Like $15.
It's so annoying. All right. So do you know about the Four Thieves vinegar?
Nope.
Okay. So Four Thieves, if you do that, what's that essential oil pyramid scheme that costs way too much for people to do?
Young Life.
That's a Christian thing. Young Living.
Okay.
But you're close.
I feel like they're
synonymous.
Wow. Garlic press. $12.
Okay. Are you finding a good one?
I said I was looking at Target garlic press. Cuisinart, $14.99.
Oh, wow. Oh, but that gets 2.5 stars. You're not looking at a good one. You can't just like buy crap.
Okay. 403 reviews, 4.6 stars, $11.99.
All right. Well, when I bought garlic presses back in 2009, they were $45.
We all know there's been a huge deflation in the garlic press market.
Obviously. Get out of here with your internet searches. Anyway. All right. So Thieves is named after, like, there's like a...
There's like an essential oil blend.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's named after... So in the Black Plague came through, and they had Four Thieves vinegar, and people used that to ward off the Black Plague.
And they would stuff those masks with it. Yeah.
So the doctor masks.
Yeah, those crazy long beaks.
And that's what they did was they would stuff, doctors would go around, and garlic was one of the things.
But also grave robbers wore that mask. That grave robbers, I thought, wore that beak mask stuffed with those herbs because they were going to rob these graves of people that were died of the plague, and that protected them.
I don't know about that, but the doctors.
That's why it's called Thieves.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, doctors may be some thieves, but...
Yeah, but if you look them up, like, doctors would put that in. But the vinegar is, I think you would drink it. And garlic was one of the main...
The herbs that are in that blend were herbs stuffed into the beaks.
Right. Yeah. Without the vinegar.
Correct.
And garlic was one of the things that they stuffed into the beak.
Nice.
Four Thieves vinegar is a vinegar... concoction and the main ingredient is garlic, which was used to ward off the plague.
Yummy.
It's also it's a really good anti-inflammatory. It reduces joint stiffness and pain. It is a mild blood thinner, so that can be good for, you know, cardiovascular, but people that are on blood thinners, just, you know, consult a doctor. This is really cool.
Good for boners.
Okay, is that true?
Know. Wouldn't that be a thing?
Like, I have no
increased
idea.
Increased circulation?
Sure. Right. Try it out. Let
Again,
us
though,
know.
bad breath might counter that, you know? It's like, look what I'm working with. Like, you stank.
So it's known for lead to help with, to get rid of lead poisoning. So Everwild is the farm that I interned last year. I was there like a couple times this year. And at Farmer's Market, a woman came up. She lives in Philly, and her daughter had lead poisoning, which apparently, like, lead poisoning is more prominent in Philly than, like...
I mean, I'm sure they have pipes, old pipes and stuff. Yeah,
than you really want to think about.
Yikes.
And she went up to the farmers at Everwild and was like, "Your garlic cured my daughter's lead poisoning." And they're like, "Wait, what?" But there's research to say that it's, like, highly effective against lead poisoning. So you can take it in different ways. You can take it as the cloves. You press it in your very expensive garlic press. And then you, like, put it with olive oil and rosemary, like I talked about the other day.
Hell
and,
yeah.
Like, get a piece of good sourdough bread, like just a little one. And it's delicious. But garlic, honey, cough syrup is a great thing to make, and we all have lots of honey, hopefully, and garlic is easy to come by. Obviously, the cheapest way to have this medicine is to grow it, plant it, and, you know, according to your zone.
Dude, garlic's fun to grow because
it is fun to grow.
You get put it in the ground. You put a bulb. What is it? 9 per square foot. You put them in, and then you know they pop up. They're growing, and then it snows. They're covered in snow, but they're like little sticking out of the snow, and then snow, and they're just they're like you in the springtime. You're like you're badass. It's so fun. Just like I don't know, there's something great about it. And it's, I like we're telling our friend that just started a school. Shout out Justine and Chad Towernicki. They started a Seeds Academy in
Acton Academy. Yeah.
What you say it
in Green Lane. Is it Green Lane? It's called Seeds Academy. It's an Acton Academy, which is a group of schools.
Got it. But they just started it this year.
And I'm like, plant garlic.
And they have the garden because it's a part of the teaching with these kids is they get, you know, they learn plants and everything. And they're like, Kara's like, dude, start garlic. And I said, that's like the only plant I know of that you can start during the school year and have it finished during the school year.
Maybe if it finishes in time.
Yeah, late May.
You can also take it as an extract. You can buy an extract. There's also, like I had mentioned before, those garlic pills. But anyway, garlic honey is a really effective cough syrup. As again, your cough, you want to be producing mucus, and it's an expectorant. It helps you get rid of that mucus. So this is what you do. You take a quart of boiling water and a pound of sliced garlic. So slice it up and you pour the water over. Once it comes to boiling, you pour the water over the garlic and then you let that garlic water sit for 8 to 12 hours.
Oh, wow.
And then you... I guess you at that point, all of the medicinal properties will be
infused in the water.
Exactly. So you can get rid of the garlic chunks. And then you add enough honey to make it the consistency of syrup.
Okay.
So whatever that is, like, you know, you just little at a time. And then you're going to want to take 1 tablespoon 4 times a day.
Okay.
And that'll help you get all of that out of your lungs, and it's antibacterial.
And it's raw honey, so there's a lot of goodness in that. It's not being heated. The honey's not being heated, so
yeah,
that's huge.
And the thing is the garlic is being heated, but that's how hot you can get the garlic, and it still keeps its medicinal properties,
and
like
that,
I was mentioning
all
before.
All that Al-Anon converted to Allison.
Close. Yep.
Cool.
Allison. Yeah, so that's it about garlic, yeah, but garlic is rad.
I have Lyme disease currently, or I don't know when you stop saying that, a month out. I just finished antibiotic use, but our herbalist was like, make sure you're eating raw garlic. And he said, make sure you use like a $12. He was like a $12 to $15. They're pretty cheap. Make sure you use a pretty inexpensive and useful
garlic press that will break immediately.
Garlic press. But he said, no, squeeze it through a garlic press, let it sit for 15 minutes and then take it. Kara had a teacher that used to do it every single day. She would take garlic and put it in a peanut butter sandwich,
which
just bread peanut butter, cover up the taste.
Sound appealing to me.
What was
all.
That? Do you remember? I'm putting you on the spot. Do you remember that crazy stat about like the amount, what it does for your cardiovascular system? It's like the equivalent of working out for an hour.
Oh no, but that was good.
It was like eating one
it
clove
helps.
Of raw garlic helps circulate blood as much as if you did a workout for a certain amount of time, that it circulates your blood through your increased heart rate.
Yeah, so don't work out, just eat garlic. The thing
that's
about
what
all
I took
herbs
from it.
Is, and this is why people just like want to take a pill, is because you have to keep the herbs or the medicine, if you will, in your body. So that's why you take this cough syrup, this garlic honey cough syrup.
Every 4 hours
every,
or whatever, yeah.
4 times a day, yeah, because it's got to stay in your system. To do the job.
Garlic, that's a good one. What'd you do, rosemary last month?
Yeah, so garlic, rosemary, like,
yeah, dude,
combine them.
Killing it. Garlic's so good for y'all. And you should grow it.
Grow it and then just like also, guys, like make a meal and then just crush with your very expensive new garlic press. Crush some fresh garlic over it. Toss it, like green beans. It can be really easy.
It can totally be easy.
Just buy gum.
Vampires are really going to give us some 1-star reviews on this episode.
Oh, darn.
Well, hey, thanks for listening. If you made it this far, as always,
you're a rock star.
We really appreciate it. Appreciate your feedback. Go read that article. I tend to ramble at the very end of these. I'm going to end quick. go read that article. Is Beekeeping Wrong? Hit us up on Instagram. Hit us up on Facebook. I'll give you Kara's cell phone number. You can just call her and let us know what you think. And then maybe we'll talk about it. I thought it could be a cool thing to do in an episode just on a reaction piece to that, that article in the New Yorker. But thank you so much for listening. We appreciate it. We'll talk to y'all soon. Peace. Bye.